Hi, thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Chrissy Mernon, and my guests are from the Chow Train, Joan Cheever and Dennis Quinn. They are partners in the war against hunger. Every week, they're out on San Antonio streets feeding the homeless and hungry people. I ran into them. They were out at the farmer's market. I was like, hey, you need to come and do a 30-minute public affairs show with me, please, because you have been in the news, you're doing good work, and we're going to talk about how the Chow Train came about, what you do, and how people can help you. So,
great.
How did the Chow Train come about?
We had just moved to San Antonio in 2004, and during that time I was writing a book, and our children were normal pre-tweens, and sometimes I just heard enough, I want a new pair of shoes, I want. And so I just thought to myself, there's so many people that are hungry in the city and they're not saying I want all the time. So I put a big pot of spaghetti or chili on the stove. And when I had heard enough, I grabbed the kids and threw them in the back of the Honda Pilot with some paper plates and cups and forks and a salad. And we just drove around the city and we found people who were really hungry and they weren't complaining, and I think we kind of got the message across.
What did that do to your kids, and what did that do to you, though?
Well, I knew, you know, when people say, well, how'd you find them, hungry people? And I said, it's not really hard, you know, open up your eyes. But what it did to the kids, it really, you know, it was an informative time in their life, and they really also opened their eyes to some respect and saw that there were hungry people, and they... To this day, they continue to do little acts of kindness. They both live in New York City, and there's a lot of little acts of kindness you can do there. And for me, it was very satisfying because this is an issue that's not just one for one generation. We have to pass this down like my parents passed down the responsibility to take care of other people.
So were you just going to do it one night with spaghetti or chili and show your kids, or how did it develop into more?
All of us who have had pre-tweens know that it's a long time to get from the pre to the teen, and even that could be a scary. No, I knew that it was going to be a continuing thing, not on a regular schedule. And I did have mothers who called me who said, hey, is the Chow Train going out tonight? Can my kid come over and have a play date and then come and then go out? So it started to be like a neighborhood thing. And then the more we found out, the more we decided to go ahead and do it on a regular schedule.
And so what was your expectation of homeless people? Had you had much experience with them, or was it eye-opening for you as well?
It wasn't as eye-opening because I had done a lot of work in the field, civil liberties type issues, and so and with the poor, so it wasn't that big of an eye-opening for me. But I have learned a whole lot. When I guess 6 years ago, there's a group in Austin that has a street retreat, and you go up there and you leave your car and leave your keys and your money and cell phone, and you get into the back of a van and you go into the middle of Austin, and the guy who's in charge of it just leaves you there and says, good luck, I'll see you in 3 days. Hang out with the homeless, you're going to learn. And so that was the best learning experience.
Oh, my. Well, yeah. Tell me about that. So, I mean, were you familiar with Austin and where they dropped you?
No, I had lived in Austin for a year, but in a total different part of town. And they left us, and I don't know the name of the park. I was a little discombobulated. But they dropped us off across from the courthouse, which was interesting because the year that I was there, I was working as a lawyer. And so I thought I could panhandle in the park and get some money. And they said, no, Joan, don't do that. You're going to end up in jail. So the homeless showed us around and showed us where to go to get food. And there was a place, you know, long line for a shower and just the basic things that you need, you know, to survive.
And then, you know, so I would think 20 minutes into it, I'd be like, oh my God, what have I done?
Right.
You know, I've got 3 days of this. And you know, and for women, I mean, I think it's tough.
Yeah.
I think it's tough on the street, period. You know, it's tough for animals. It's tough for people.
Right.
But it's especially hard for women.
It was scary. But we were taken care of, and, you know, they got helped us get the cardboard out of the dumpster to make a little mallet on the ground. And my darling husband here said, I don't want to hear from you for 3 days.
I was a bit worried.
Well, yeah. Said,
you know, you're doing this, but, you know, good luck.
You'll be okay. You, knew she, exactly. You knew she'd be okay?
I knew she'd be okay, yeah. She's a tough lady. So, yeah, she was fine. It was a great experience, great learning experience.
So what did, I mean, you know, what did you learn from that you didn't already know?
Well, I learned that there are not a lot of places to go for a hot meal.
Or a shower.
Or a shower. But the hot meal was really, because we had already been doing this for a while. So I understood how important it was to have something hot and soothing and comforting. And also to make sure that, you know, for all our meals, the first course is the soup. And everybody has to have the soup or they don't get the main meal. I'm kind of like the soup Nazi. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to drink this because at least I know that they're getting their vitamins once a week. And it's packed with vitamins because it's all fresh produce from the Almas Basin Farmers Market, who donates a ton of beautiful produce to us. And the other thing that was really important is if you're the one that's providing the food, be on time. There are people waiting for you and there are people depending on you. And it's just important. It's a sign of respect to get there on time. And so our times have gotten much better. They were wildly different when we started. But when I was living on the streets, I understood that that was really important.
Because that's what you look forward to all day
Absolutely.
Long. At this time, there will be this.
Right.
Yeah, this time and this place, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And thank God for public libraries. Because you could go in there and, you know, get a cold drink of water out of the fountain and use the facilities. So that was a wonderful place to go also.
Public library.
Yeah, especially here in San Antonio, you see a lot of homeless using the computers online at our downtown library here.
So it offers, it's really a safe respite for from the street.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Think about like during the summer when it's extremely hot, the library is air conditioned.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are many homeless that like to read. I mean, at our first stop, I call him Red. But he's always asking, do you have some books? And so we give him a couple books. Now we know he likes mysteries, especially. And so we try to put about 3 or 4 books in the car. And if Red's there, he gets the books.
So what are people's misconceptions about the homeless?
You want to answer that?
I think a lot of people are afraid of the homeless. Maybe it's the fear of the unknown. But we find that they're just normal people who have been, you know, either they're one step away from a paycheck, you know, then they've been removed from their apartments, or they've had medical problems where, you know, the medical bills are just clean them out and they can't pay their rent anymore. There's a lot of drug addiction, alcohol addiction, some mental issues. So I think it's a wide variety of different issues that homeless deal with. I don't think it's a one-stop shop type of issue. Mm-hmm. You know? So there's a lot of variables.
And I've heard people say, and I cringe, it's, oh, they want to be on the street. They like that kind of life.
No, that's not true at all. That is not true at all.
No, they would love to be off the street, and it would be wonderful if San Antonio could institute a Housing First initiative like they have in Austin, Texas, Portland, Oregon, Salt Lake City, up also on the East Coast. But there's a lot of places that, and you know, the data has borne out that the most important thing is to put people in some sort of housing, their own housing, really, and then you can work on all the other issues. And it's very successful, but getting them into housing, because if you think about it, and my experience just walking around Austin for 3 days is the foremost thing on your mind is, where are you going to sleep tonight? And that
safely, sleep safely, yeah.
And that changes, but that's all you're thinking about. And so, if you can knock that down, and people know how to get you, where to find you, and help you, then that's big. And it's not my phrase; it's from somebody else. But the key to homelessness is a key, your own key, your own little house key, they're doing little houses too, which work and communal kitchens, and so that's really important to have a sense of community, have a place where you can lock your door.
I know the San Antonio Police Department has recently instituted a program where they have two or three policemen who are out of uniform going around to, they approach the homeless and they talk to them and they try to find out, you know, what their deal is, and they, you know, try to help them. They give them suggestions on where to go. I'm sure a lot of them go down to Haven for Hope, which is a good program. So I think that's a great start for the city that they've instituted that program, and we'll see where that goes.
But there's a lot that needs to be done. I mean, the biggest issues are identification, theft of identification, and I'm not talking about computers, but just being able to have an ID, and Catholic Worker House works on that. So does CAM, Christian Assistance Ministries, and so does the church at United
Methodist
Park, Methodist Church, Travis Park.
Travis Park.
Yeah. Travis Park United Methodist Church.
Yeah. And they also provide showers. And the other thing is not having an address. I mean, if you're homeless and you have information coming from the government, or if you're on disability and you don't have an address, you're not going to get your disability check or Social Security. So it's really important that these other groups, like I just mentioned, are working really hard to provide an address for those people.
And I think that police team also helps with identification. You know, I heard something recently about that. And, you know, one time I was at the DPS, I guess renewing my license or something, and there was a guy there who had been a victim. His stuff had been stolen, and he needed to get a driver's license. And they were like, you can't get a driver's license with it. How can you prove?
It's a catch-22.
It was really, I mean, and he was just distraught, and they couldn't help him.
Right.
And I thought, what do you do?
What do you do? I don't know.
Yeah, so that's a dilemma, and there's people here that work on that.
I guess you start from the beginning and get a Social Security card.
And a birth certificate.
Go back to the hospitals and try to get that. I don't know how.
So it's all those things that you hardly give thought to because you have an ID in your wallet, and and you probably had no trouble getting it. And yeah, so that's interesting to note. Okay, so the Chow Train. Our guests this morning, Joan Cheever and Dennis Quinn, they are partners in the Chow Train. They are, said they're partners in the war against hunger, and they feed people in San Antonio. But you also do disasters, right? And so what made you go beyond San Antonio?
Well, the first disaster was Joplin, and we were home. We taped the nightly news every night, and it was a couple of days after, and we watched the news and we saw the pictures and we thought, oh my God, those people are homeless too. They're newly homeless and they have no food. So
and we had very recently just purchased a new food truck. So we thought, this would be a great opportunity to use our new food truck and help people.
The only problem was I didn't know how to drive the food truck. So Dennis at the time was out of town, and I had found out that there were some people from the VFW in New Braunfels that were going to go up there. They had a family member, a couple of them, that were injured. So I called, and I said, you know, can I caravan with you? Oh, that would be a great idea. That would be so cool. And then about 5 minutes into the conversation, I said, well, you know, I said caravan. I said, I lied a little bit. I don't know how to drive this truck. They said, you want us to drive you? I said, that would be great. And so they did. And Rex Long and Chris Long were the first drivers. And it was you get to know someone very well, 14 hours in a car packed with food and in a trailer, pulling the trailer is what, 8,000 to 10,000 pounds?
Yeah, it's a 14-foot trailer that we pull with our Ford pickup truck, and fully loaded it's about 8 or 9,000 pounds. So it's a pretty heavy load to be pulling, especially if you've never done it before. So fortunately Rex came to our rescue.
And it's, you know, it's a kitchen in there, so it's a kitchen on wheels. So the best thing about having a food truck or a food trailer is that you can go right into the heart of the disaster, open up the serving window, and just start serving hot food. I mean, there's two refrigerators and a freezer, you know, stove, oven. It's got everything that a small restaurant kitchen would have.
And so what'd you do in Joplin? How many people did you help serve?
Boy, I don't know.
Or they just came and came
they
and came?
They just came. And, you know, it was during the time that it was still a recovery site. They were still finding people alive. So, and that disaster was, I think 161 people were killed. So we fed hundreds But then there was also a curfew, so we had to get out of there at a certain time. And one night we got a police escort out, which, you know, I guess if you gotta leave, you gotta leave. But we would serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I would say, you know, at that time, probably 800, 900.
And what was the group? There was a volunteer group.
There were a lot of good Samaritan's Purse and AmeriCorps group. And then we returned back a month later because we were realizing that the AmeriCorps group, which is 19 to 24, they were getting like one meal a day. They were going out and picking up all the debris and everything else. And I said, you guys, you can't start the morning without having anything in your stomach. So we brought San Antonio to Joplin, and they, for many of them, got their first breakfast tacos with some salsa and the works. And then gazpacho, that was a hit for lunch along with the sandwich. They had never seen a cold tomato soup with lots of goodies in it. So, and that was probably 3,000 to 4,000 people that we served.
So after Joplin, you were like, okay, we can handle a disaster, and there will be another one because there will always be disasters. And so you work here, you have your programs here, and then you're ready to go on a disaster in the region?
Yeah, I mean, the furthest I think is, well, the furthest was Hurricane Sandy, but we didn't bring the truck there. We just happened to be in the neighborhood visiting our son at college, and we did take over a church kitchen there, and that was probably the most challenging.
That was in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, mm-hmm. New York.
Yeah.
And it was the most challenging because it was getting all this food, keeping it hot, and getting it, walking it. We weren't the walkers up the staircases, but there were some other volunteers, and so we would pack the meals and pack sleeping bags around them and then put them in big coolers, and then they would go into the apartment buildings just door by door.
So they'd still be warm when
they
were.
Yeah, it was in the middle of the winter.
It was snowing.
Freezing. It was snowing outside. It was freezing.
So that was thousands also. And then we also partnered with, at one of the disasters, we got to know a group called Operation Barbecue, and they had kind of started at Joplin, and they are they're barbecue champs from all over the country.
We call them barbecue bubbas with much love.
Yeah, yes. With much bubba love. So they are doing all the barbecuing, and then the Chow Train in disasters is known for doing all the fresh fruits and vegetables and salads. Everybody craves a salad and just whatever we can bring.
And they have a good network. They have a barbecue chefs from all around the country, and whenever there's a disaster, they send out people that are the closest ones to those disasters, but they have a very good network, and they're always there, and they have a lot of donations from some of the big chicken farmers and meat producers. They bring in tractor trailers full of meat and chicken and such. So it's very well organized.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking there's so much generosity in America, isn't there? And
there's
so many good people that just drop everything and help. Yeah. And you see that.
Yeah. I mean, we have one HEB, which is an amazing company here, local, that donates huge amounts of food.
And then we have another big one for the Chow Train, which we love, love, love. And I don't know how we'd do it without them, but it's Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
And three nights a week. Members of the St. David's Episcopal Church go to Trader Joe's at 9 o'clock, and instead of throwing the food out in the trash can, they mark it and give it all to St. David's. And that food ministry supports about 8 or 9 other food ministries. I mean, there's not anything that goes, everything is cooked up, and we are able to serve thousands in San Antonio every week.
So with the Chow Train, you want to make sure people get what kind of food? Because you're a little different as far as food truck, correct?
Yeah, we're very different. We start every meal with a hot soup. We found that when people are really, really hungry and people...
This is all homemade, chopped up vegetables. Everything is fresh. This is nothing from a can.
From the Almas Basin Farmers Market.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, for people who said, I don't like vegetable soup, I said, please just two sips. That's it. They come back for 4 cups. So a lot of people love this vegetable soup. So we start that. And it really, two reasons. One, we want to make sure everyone is getting at least their vegetables in a cup at least once a week. And two, it's really calming. You know, when you've been at the point where you're so hungry and you just, you're shaking and you immediately get a hot cup of soup in your hand, it just, it calms people down and they know that the main course is coming, but they have something to satisfy them, mm-hmm. even if it's only temporarily.
And then the second course?
And then the rest of the courses are, last night we had picadillo that was provided by Jason Dady. We also had a cold cucumber salad from the farmers. We had a fresh garden salad, which had the farmer's tomatoes and roasted corn and hard-boiled eggs. Really nice bread, not white bread, but a whole grain good bread from Trader Joe's. And then we had some desserts, both from Trader Joe's and from Jason Dady. It was leftovers for him. He had done a wedding on a Saturday, and he called us up on Sunday or Monday and said, I've got some food, which is wonderful. The other thing that we're trying to get the message out to restaurants and caterers, we've been really, really blessed with another caterer in town, which is Paige Bartow, who provides us with so much food and great food, is that you don't have to throw it away. In fact, there's a state and a federal law that encourages retail, grocery stores, caterers, and restaurants, please do not throw this food out. Get it to a nonprofit. And because the landfills are filling up, and there's so many people that can that need this food, and there's a tax write-off, you know, and there's a financial incentive, and there's an incentive for your heart, which means you're doing the right thing to feed people, and you don't want them climbing through your dumpster. It's a more dignified way to be able to get food to people who need it.
So I've been at things where all the tables are set and they put salads out, and then, you know, 75% of the tables are occupied, 25% are not occupied, and that food sits there. And you think, oh, don't waste it.
Joan is not shy. She goes up to the manager after an event like that and says, what are you doing with the food? We can repurpose it.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time they say, great, here, we'll package it up, and they send it off with us. And that's just what we do.
Okay.
We repurpose it.
So if somebody hearing this is out at something where they have extra food or unused food or available food.
Absolutely.
Call the Chow Train.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do people reach you?
Chowtrain.org. And there's a link that will, you can send us an email.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe our phone number is on there as well.
Okay.
So chowtrain.org.
So every week, so go through your week. On Tuesday nights, are you at the same place every Tuesday night?
Let's start on Sunday.
On Sunday.
Pick up food.
On Sunday, well, Saturdays. Saturday and Sunday, we go pick up the food from Trader Joe's at St. David's Episcopal. I also see what we have to the meat, the protein.
And we also pick up vegetables at the Almost Basin Farmer's Market on Saturdays, mm-hmm. as well.
And Tuesday.
Well, so do you base your menu on what's available? Or,
yes.
Or do you have, like, we're going to do this, we need this?
No.
No, it's we have this, let's make this.
In the beginning, it was on this is what I would like to cook, because I really didn't have a choice before we got these donations. Now I feel like, sometimes I feel like a chef on Chopped. They give you a basket of groceries and make a meal out of it.
But you can, can't you?
I can.
Yeah.
I can, and I've gotten pretty creative. And, you know, I went to St. Philip's Culinary School 5 years ago to get my associate's degree, and you really learn to be creative. And I really wanted to learn about food and make sure it was cooked properly and that we were doing the right things.
Mm-hmm.
So it really starts on, I would say it starts on Friday, trying to figure out where the meat, and when do I start defrosting it, when do I start cooking it, and then we just go from there. Friday through Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
It's a process. And also calling around to the other, we have partner agencies, not agencies, but nonprofits, which are the Catholic Worker House and Under the Bridge. And we're always on the phone with Catholic Worker House saying, what do you guys need? We can drop off lunch on Monday. What time will there be somebody there to pick it up at your location?
And Catholic Worker House serves two meals a day or
three meals a day?
Three meals a day. And I would, how many people do you think they serve?
It depends.
Like 100 maybe?
100 plus.
Yeah. So there's always a stream of people coming through there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always needing, you know, mm-hmm. food and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they serve an early dinner. As does Haven for Hope. They serve, you know, one One of the questions I always get is, why are you serving on Tuesday night when there's another ministry that's serving on Tuesday night? I said, well, they serve at 5 o'clock. And I would say half our people, half are homeless and half are, they have a home, they don't have any food in the refrigerator. And there's a good majority that are working poor. So nobody gets off at 5 o'clock to be able to stand in line at Haven for Hope for dinner. So we provide the late meal, mm-hmm. which is about 8 to 8:45. And also we do food to go because we have people that are coming right off of work and need to get right onto that bus and get home. So, you know, we all have our own little niches about who we serve and at what time. And I think the times are important. I think people don't realize that.
Yeah. No, they don't. And, you know, I don't think there's any shortage of hungry people, that there's plenty for everybody to go around. And even with as many organizations are doing things, there's still people.
There's still people. There's still people that we miss. And we try to hang around till, what, about 9 o'clock at Maverick Park on Tuesdays, waiting to see, you know, you look down the street and you see someone running. And it's like, don't run. We got you. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, your dinner here waiting for you. So, and you know, the question we ask the, you know, other organizations say, well, how many, do you have stats on how many are homeless and how many are couch surfing and how many are working poor? And I said, you know, the Child Train asked one question, are you hungry? And that's it.
That's all that matters to you.
That's all that matters to me. I'm not going to stand there taking data and clicking people in. And we've gotten smart about having enough food. In the beginning, I was, you wouldn't believe how many times, well, I pray all the time, but so many prayers for the, you know, fishing loaves miracle. We did have a couple of those on the street. It helped by tearing tacos in half and, mm-hmm. you know, re-putting them on the plate. But we've gotten smarter. And then all of our leftovers on Tuesday, or we plan for making more food, go to Catholic Worker House for their Wednesday lunch.
Oh, and I would assume nothing goes to waste
nothing
on the Child Train.
It
will find a purpose, a stomach, or a home. Yes.
There's always a
home.
We
have 5 freezers in our garage. There's a lot of food in there.
Yeah. And a lot, a lot can be frozen and thank goodness for that.
You bet. Freezer's a great thing.
And they're just as tasty once it comes out.
Absolutely.
And sometimes even more.
Yeah. You bet. Yeah. Okay, so that gets you through Tuesday. So what do you do on Wednesday? Is that it?
Rest.
When do you guys, I was thinking, when do you get a day off?
We clean up. Usually Tuesday night late we're cleaning, but Wednesday we're finished the cleaning, put everything away, and just take a deep breath for a little while. And, you know.
Answering emails, posting on the Facebook page. Yeah. Writing thank you notes to donors, because we love donors. Mm-hmm. Not everything is provided by, you know, the other donors we have. I mean, we do have gas for the truck and insurance and all those other things.
And paper goods that
we serve with. And containers.
And a lot of stuff we have.
We have catering equipment because we don't take the food truck on the street. We put it in catering equipment and keeps it nice and hot, like every caterer in this town puts their food in catering equipment.
And we put it in the back of our pickup truck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we serve from.
Okay. Well, you know, we're out of time. So how can people help you? And do you need volunteers? What do you need?
We need money. We need donations of food in number 10 cans, I would say, like tomatoes and staples. Or money will buy that. Volunteers would be great, and they can go to our website, www.thechowtrain.org. We have a telephone number, 501-6400. They can call. They can also email either Dennis or I at dennis@chowtrain.org, joan@chowtrain.org. Check on the Chow Train's Facebook page, because I post a lot of information there. And talk to your farmers or your grocers, or see what happens with Dent cans. And also at these galas or lunches or anything else, that there's a group of people that will pick it up. And I always carry hotel pans and bags and gloves.
You are ready.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Go
at the drop of a hat, call Joan at the Chow Train.
Absolutely.
Chrissy, I just want to thank you for having us, and we enjoyed being here.
Oh, I want to, you know, thank you for coming by. And that's just what an awesome thing you guys do. Joan Cheever, Dennis Quinn, partners in the war against hunger, they run the Chow Train.
Thank you.